Welcome to Corrittles. This week, Stupid Email Mistakes, Chapter 1, Part 1. The questions this cast answers are, what mistakes am I making in my emails? Why are they mistakes? And what should I do instead of sending an email?
Folks, you may get tired in the next couple of weeks as we remind you again and again about our new empty disk product, but we've been being asked about this for the last 15 years. It took us a long time to develop it, a couple of years. We had to test it extensively. And for those of you who have taken it before, you know what you didn't like about our previous vendor's product. And fortunately for us, the concept of disk is not copyrighted, but instruments can be. And so we built our own instrument and tested it thousands of times and made it simpler and smarter and cheaper. Let's start with cheaper this time. It's only $30. Our previous vendor was about to raise their rate to $80. Ours is better, and it's cheaper. And the reason why is we actually make less money on each one of them now. But the reason why is we want more people to benefit from disk. Probably the most important tactical knowledge I ever got in my career. And I mentioned it's simpler and smarter too. Smarter because we focus on you and what you can do differently. 20 of the 30 pages in your instrument will be telling you how to work with people who are different than you, specific behaviors to engage in. And it's simpler because we got rid of the numbers, because people used to obsess about the numbers and it didn't do any good because it might have been scientifically accurate, but it was impossible to determine in day-to-day life. So simpler, smarter, cheaper. Come try Empty Disk, $30 at the website.
If everybody had got the memo about how to send email, there wouldn't be so many emails with stupid mistakes on them. And not just spelling mistakes or grammar mistakes or this doesn't make sense mistakes, but like sending an email at all mistakes. Most of us, I don't know, I was in school before email existed because, yes, I am that old. But even those who went to school after email existed, I don't think there is a class called how to send an effective email. There might be one where you get taught how to send an email, but not how to send an effective one. But ignorance is no defense, and it's so easy to fix the mistakes that we make. So in this guidance, we're going to talk about 6 stupid mistakes. And then at the end, we're going to give you a checklist so that when you are ready to send an email, you can quickly go through the checklist and see if you've made any of these stupid mistakes. And it is chapter 1 because there's more than 6. So
oh, yeah.
In a few weeks, we'll do, I don't know, 7 to 12 or 7 to 13, and probably there'll be a chapter 50 because there's that many.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things we always talk about, those things that you do so much and yet there's no guidance on how to do it effectively.
Right.
Yeah. Our outline for this cast is we're going to review the 6 mistakes that Wendy mentioned. Mistake number 1 is using email for urgent communication. Mistake number 2, choosing email rather than another medium. Mistake number 3, actions in emails for those who are CC'd. Mistake number 4, tasks but no assignees or deadlines. Mistake number 5, copying too few or too many. Mistake number 6, drawing the wrong conclusions from the written word. Can't wait to talk about that. And our last point here will be our checklist, this stupid email checklist that Wendy referenced. We're going to go over that.
That's a lot of fun to write, I can tell you. So first, the first mistake is using email for urgent communication. And the secret here is email is never, ever the right medium for urgent, that is time-sensitive communication. That there is literally no such thing as an urgent email. And we know that you get emails marked as urgent, either by the software or by the fact that people write urgent in the subject line, usually in all caps. But it doesn't matter if you mark it as urgent or they put all caps or all the text is in red, which somebody used to do to me. None of that actually makes the email urgent. Urgent means requiring immediate action or attention. And so when somebody sends you an email, Or if you try and send an email that and you mark it urgent that says, I require your immediate attention or action, but then you're using a medium that doesn't facilitate that. It's like entering Formula One and driving a go-kart. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
If you want something to happen immediately, if you need someone's urgent attention, if you need someone's attention now, then you don't you know, send up a smoke signal, you go and smack them. Like, you know, it doesn't make sense.
There's a great analogy here, or a good reference. Wendy won't get this because she doesn't watch The Office. But for those of you who watch The Office, and I think just in general, a good practice is if Michael Scott, the boss in The Office, does it, you should do the opposite.
Exactly.
It's satire for a reason, right? But Michael Scott has, there's this great line in an episode where he says, people are giving him grief about marking things urgent. And he says, I mark them urgent A, urgent B, urgent C, and urgent D. Urgent D, you don't even need to really read. Which is such a good commentary on those folks that are marking everything urgent, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a difference between, you know, the occasional urgent email, which shouldn't ever be used because it's not urgent. But then the people that mark everything as urgent, because if everything's urgent, nothing is.
Exactly.
So you wouldn't send a letter that was urgent because sending a letter takes time and letters aren't read as soon as they're received. You know that. The very nature of a letter is there's no hurry about the topic. If there was a hurry, you'd use some other medium. And emails are much more like letters than they are like some other more urgent or more immediate medium. If you want to get hold of someone quickly, you don't send them a letter, you call them. Because there's a difference between the time scales. And email is much more on the end of this continuum, on the letter end of the continuum, than it is on the stand in front of them and yell to get their attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, we can be easily deceived, right? The software that we use that marks emails as urgent or provides you with read receipts or some other way reassures you that you're doing the right thing, that's entirely misleading. Sending an email doesn't tell you if the person even knows about the email, let alone telling you that they're doing what they need to do or taking action on the email. It's the same thing. And I remember this in my career. We don't use read receipts here at Manager Tools, but I remember in my career, there were cultures where mm-hmm. you used read receipts, especially if it was from legal or something where, you know, you're using read receipts to make sure you're validating that someone read the email. Read receipts don't tell you that they read the email. It tells you that they opened the email, right? You have no idea whether they read it, whether they're actioning it, whether the appropriate thing is being done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally, I could open an email, decide I'm not going to do anything about it, close it. And you could have thought, the moment she opens that, she's going to know that I need her to take action. And then my judgment is, I don't need to take action, and I close it. And you think I'm doing something just because you've got the read receipt. And
right.
No, you're not.
Very flawed.
Yes. So this is what to do instead. So if you find yourself typing the word urgent and you're in your email client or in the browser, stop writing. Just stop. If the person you are emailing is in the building, stand up, walk to their desk and talk to them face to face. And if they're further away, then pick up the phone and call them. It literally is in your own interest to do so, because if you do that, you'll have their attention and they'll start actioning whatever it is in the timescale you expected. If you send an email, sure, it's off your desk, but it is going to come back to bite you when they don't read it or they don't action it. If you go to the desk and they're not there, or you call and you get voicemail, you can do voicemail and send them an instant message and send them an email and call one of their friends to see where they are or call the hotel reception to see if they've seen them. You can do all of those things as well, but do the fastest thing first.
Yeah, if you want to convey urgency, all of those things that you just described really convey urgency. Typing urgent in a subject line of an email, no, that's not going to get it done. Yeah, I know too many people who, they may say, you know, I'll pick up the phone, but then they don't leave a voicemail mm-hmm. and then they just send the email anyways. Leave a voicemail, right? Provide that additional context that maybe you can't provide in an email. Yeah, absolutely.
And there's the difference of a voicemail where you sound panicky and, you know, if I get an email from someone that says help, like, oh yeah, you need my help. If I get a phone call or a voicemail and someone says help, I need to talk to you right away, and they've got that urgency in their voice, then I'm going to react to that. So leaving a voicemail gives you all of that kind of additional information.
Absolutely. Yeah, don't hesitate to leave voicemails. Mistake number two is choosing email rather than another medium. Email isn't the right medium for urgent, nor is it the right medium for complex or complicated or difficult subjects. It's not the right medium for any topic that could be misunderstood, right? You want to provide that context. You want to be able to provide the additional dialogue. You want to be able to, you know, create a possibility for people to ask questions, right? Email is not the right medium for repeated follow-ups, right? Those reply all threads that then get really convoluted. You don't want that for something that's really complex. And it's certainly not the right medium for bad news, right? Like layoffs, unfortunately. You know what? It's not the right medium for feedback. We talk about this all the time when we train folks. Feedback can't be delivered through email.
Not even positive, right?
No, yeah. Not even, yeah, positive or negative. Yeah. No.
And not if they're remote and not if you don't work on the same shift. Well, whatever reasons you've got that you want to send feedback by email, no. The answer is no. Doesn't matter. No.
No, exactly. Because feedback leverages your relationship, right? And email does not build relationships. Email is not a relationship building tool. There are so many messages that are wrong for email that honestly, it's a little surprising that we use it as much as we do.
Exactly. It is amazing. Like 75% of the communication, despite the fact it's only appropriate for 10.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you hear complaints of meetings and people say, oh, that could have been an email. But you rarely see people complaining that an email could have been a phone call or could have been a meeting or should have been a meeting. That the exception of the complaints is when people send emails for layoffs. That usually makes the news because it's inconceivable but anybody would think that email was appropriate for a layoff. And yet it seems to happen all the time.
Wendy, I will, and this is anecdotal, okay? This is purely my experience. But in my experience, the people that I've heard say, you know, this meeting could have been an email are usually more junior. And the interactions that I've had with more senior folks in an organization are much quicker to say, let's just get everybody in a room.
Yes.
Right? Let's get everybody in a room and figure this out. That's just my experience. But those are the folks that are on that other end of the spectrum that it, you don't hear it very often, but they say, yeah, why are we sending emails when we could be in a meeting room talking about this so that there's no confusion.
And we can solve it in 5 minutes because we can all talk at the same time.
And we can all leave the room knowing we're on the same page,
mm-hmm.
right? It's huge.
I think it's a condemnation of the number of meetings that more junior people go to that are bad meetings, that have no point, that aren't well run, that, you know, run over, they let somebody talk. Whereas a senior person's meeting, if they say, okay, let's just pull everybody in a room and it's going to take 10 minutes and it takes 8 minutes, then they're like, okay, we're done. And everybody leaves. And they'll walk in and they'll say, okay, we're here to solve X. And that 8 minutes is what we're doing for those 8 minutes. The better run the meetings, I think the less likely people are to say that could have been an email.
Yeah. And I think too many meetings, just to further that point, too many meetings that are happening in organizations, potentially at lower levels, that just makes more sense, is that those meetings don't have a clear purpose,
mm-hmm.
right? Some of those meetings are just because it seems right that we should all kind of get together and talk about this. But what are we trying to do, right? And you don't have that with a lot of senior folks. They're not going into just nebulous meetings don't have a point or a purpose or an objective.
Going back to layoffs, when we see something in the news that says this company laid off so many people by email, it makes the news. And everybody, it seems pretty obvious that a personal conversation should have happened. And yet it can't be obvious because it happens.
It still happens,
And it's usually, in my opinion, because the sender is choosing the easier wrong rather than the harder right. It's easier to send someone an email than it is to face them and tell them that they're being laid off. And it's easier to send your boss bad news in an email than it is to tell them face to face or tell them on the phone and hear and see the disappointment and the anger and deal with the fact that they blow up or whatever happens. Often not what you expect. I think we expect our bosses to blow up far more than they actually do. It's easier to tell someone no in an email than it is to call them and say, we're not going ahead. And we need to really stop being professional wimps and, you know, man up and have the hard conversations rather than hiding behind our email.
Absolutely. And even if you're not a people-focused person and you would rather send an email with, I keep going back to the bad news for your boss or bad news to your boss thing, it's totally easier, right, to send that email. But I would want the additional data, the additional information of being able to read body language, facial expression off of my boss when I give that bad news. Is it as bad as I thought it was going to be? Is it worse? I mean, you get more than just the words back, right? And you don't know if they reply to that email and say, no worries.
Yes, right.
Well, is no worries, no worries, or is no worries, no worries,
yes.
Right? I mean, those are two very different things.
Yes.
Yeah. And for those of you that are just listening, you can't see my face. I'm making a grumpy face.
The size of the black mark cannot be seen in the sentence, no worries.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So what to do instead? Think about what you wish to convey. If it's simple, informational, uncontentious, unlikely to lead to debate, then an email is probably right. But if not, then another medium is preferable. If there's the more people that need to give input, the more likely it is that another medium rather than email will work better. And anytime a subject gives you a pit in your stomach, then email is not right.
That's such a good point.
Yeah, anytime it gives you that feeling, then email's the wrong thing to do. And then that's not to say that email might not be right in addition or as a follow-up, but the first piece of communication needs to be in person or by video or at the very least by phone so that the message is conveyed and then you can follow up with email.
Yeah, that's a great point.
If you're in a large organization, folks, don't forget, we can come to you. We're starting to get more and more client requests. We're getting requests for proposals. We're getting large asks. Companies have discovered that the pandemic exposed that a lot of managers weren't as good as they thought they were. Being at a distance is much harder. All you have to do is look up the Allen curve on Wikipedia, and you realize, I've got to get better as a manager. And the way to do that is either to come to a client event or to come to one of our public EMCs or to come to a virtual effective manager conference. All kinds of options. You could also use video, or you could also get my book. All kinds of ways, because that's what we would have wanted if we were customers of ours.
Mistake number three is actions in emails for those that are CC'd. When there's an action for someone in an email, that email must go to the person, not CC, right? CC standing for carbon copy. But that's for them, right? And it's kind of a rule, right?
Exactly.
It's one of those things that we, again, you don't get taught email. You don't get taught how to do those things. But if someone has an action in an email, they need to be on the to line. A reason for this would be that people, speaking of rules, some people create rules. And
yes,
they create rules for, if I'm copied on an email, it goes to a certain folder, right? Because it's something that I'm going to maybe glance at or breeze by, but I'm not going to read. Because if I'm only copied on it, it's not for me.
Yes.
But again, that's not necessarily something that everyone's taught.
So back in the old days, and I can do this because Andrew is too young to remember this, but back in the old days, before there was internet and email and before fire, no, not that far, in order to create a copy of a letter you were typing, you had to place carbon paper between the one you were writing on and the piece of paper that would become the copy. So you would have two sheets of paper, and sandwiched between them, you'd have this carbon paper that's kind of like tissue paper with purple stuff on it. So then you type the letter, you send the letter that you type, the top piece of paper, you throw away the carbon paper because it's now useless, and the carbon copy is the copy that goes in the file. It doesn't even go to anyone. It doesn't get read. It's just there just in case we need it later. So if you got the letter, then obviously it was to you and you had to action it. If you got the copy, it was literally just so you could file it. It wasn't even for you to look at. And so when we started using CCs, everybody understood that because everybody had just gone through that phase of, oh, look, we've just moved to email, but, you know, we're old enough to remember CCs. But now nobody remembers that. It always makes me laugh that it's CC, but nobody remembers what CC meant. And if you go to Word and you save something, it's a floppy disk. And nobody knows what a floppy disk is. They just know that's the symbol for save.
Right.
So carbon copy or CC's emails don't need to be read. And because they don't need to be, you can't use them and believe that someone will read them. Because some people know the rule that they don't need to read them.
Exactly. So what to do instead is, if you really want someone to take an action from your email, their name needs to be in the to line.
That's easy, right?
So simple.
Super easy. Yeah.
Yeah. So mistake number four is kind of along those same lines in terms of action items for other people. Mistake number four is tasks, but no assignees or deadlines. Emails that have task assignments need to include who is going to be doing that task, right? The assignee, and a deadline, right? Those tasks need to have a deadline. Emails without are just asking for the task to either not get done or certainly not get done on time, because how would they know what's on time? Yeah, these incredibly vague emails that are just like, oh, this thing needs to get done. Yeah. Is not furthering the work at all.
It's never going to get done.
It's creating another question. Oh, well, who needs to... Now you're putting the onus on the reader to try to decipher who's going to do that, when it's going to get done, or at least have to ask those questions, which again goes down that trail of the back and forth
in emails
that we're trying to avoid.
Yeah. And sometimes you see, or you often see emails sent to one or more people, and there's a task in it. Like, say two or three people work together on the creation of a report, and one person creates the data or the content, and one person pulls it together and emails it to their boss, the shared boss. So it's two colleagues working together. And the boss replies to the email and says, there's an error that needs correcting. But it doesn't specify which person should do that and or when. And what happens is each person thinks the other person is doing that correction because there's no specification. Right.
Andrew thinks Wendy's doing it. Wendy thinks Andrew's doing it. And no one's doing it.
No one's doing it. Yeah. And a week later, the boss is like, why haven't I got that report? And then you just sort of look at each other and go, oops. But the two people are frustrated because they thought, I thought it was Andrew's job. Why would anybody expect me to do it? And Andrew's thinking the same thing. And you can get around that so easily by saying, Andrew, please correct and resend to me. Or please talk about it and decide who's going to do it and then send it to me. The boss doesn't necessarily need to make the decision about who's going to do it, but he needs to make it clear that someone's making a decision about
who's doing it. Yeah, and get it to me by 5 p.m. on Friday, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
This is, Mark calls this the tennis doubles problem. Because you know when you're playing doubles in tennis, the ball comes over the net, and then depending on where it is, if it's in the middle, then one person has to shout mine so that you both know who's going to hit the ball. If neither of you shout mine, it just sort of bounces and then, you know, you lose the point. And that's what so often happens when nobody's assigned. Everyone stands there and nobody claims it. And so the ball bounces and you lose the point.
That's such a good analogy. I'm surprised with Mark being such a fan of baseball that he wouldn't call it like the deep infield fly like conundrum. Because then you've got like the infielder and the outfielder going like, I got it. Well, the doubles tennis thing probably makes more sense.
Yeah, and sometimes bosses don't include that because they expect, you know, high-performing directs are likely to say, it's mine, I've got it.
Yeah.
But, you know, not everybody does that. And even a high-performing direct, if there's high workload or there's, you know, it's not very clear or, you know, they're having a bad day, they might not see it either.
And Wendy, I would also argue that even in and of itself could be an issue, because let's say Andrew and Wendy are both... They're both high performers. They're go-getters, right? And so they both take it upon themselves, and the boss gets two emails.
Yes.
And now is like, wait, which one do I use, right? Mm-hmm. You would hope to assume that both are the same, but maybe not. Maybe the direction wasn't clear where the error was. And so now you're left going, hey, great. I'm glad you both were on it, but I don't know which one of these I should use now. Now we need to send another email.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right? So if your emails aren't being answered and you're not specifying who should do the task, then you can change that. And there might be other reasons that your emails don't get read or don't get actioned, but you can eliminate one easy one by just saying who should do the action. And the other thing that I love is emails that say, please complete the attached form, but don't tell you when. And then a week later, you get something that says, you haven't completed the form. And I'm like, no, because you didn't tell me that I had to do it
right
then.
Yeah.
You know?
Deadlines drive behavior.
Exactly.
I have a mountain of tasks that have a deadline. Those are the ones I'm working on. And when I get caught up, I might get to these things that are just floating out there.
Exactly. Yeah. Doctor's offices. And then you get there and they're like, you didn't fill the form in. No, because you didn't tell me I had to do it before I got here. Mm-hmm. And you cannot expect people to prioritize their work if you don't help them in doing so by giving them a deadline.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, it goes to the bottom of the pile, just like Andrew said.
Well, and here's the other thing about assigning deadlines is, this might be a little off topic, but by saying, hey, can you get that to me by tomorrow at 5 p.m., right? Or whatever, right? You assign the deadline. If that deadline is problematic, when will you know? Now. They're going to say, oh, wait, I'm in an all-day class tomorrow. I won't be able to get that to you tomorrow by 5 p.m. And then you can decide, oh, well, then we need somebody else to work on it. Or, oh, okay, well, then take another day, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say Thursday at 5 p.m. rather than tomorrow. Well, that's a lot clearer and a lot more helpful than just leaving that out there.
And
right?
Not knowing until Friday morning that you don't have the thing that you needed
exactly.
Thursday night. It's just frustrating.
So what to do instead is also pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
When you have tasks that need to be done in an email, you include the assignee and the deadline. An easy way to remember this is Horseman's Law of Project Management. Who does what by when? To make it even easier on the recipients, you could use spaces or bold type to separate actions from other parts of the email and use that who does what by when order each time, right? So that every time someone gets an email from you, they can see clearly there are actions, who's doing them, and when they need to be done by.
That's professionalism.
Yes, exactly.
So that's 4 out of 6 of the mistakes. So we'll leave you a week to fix those before we do the others, and we'll go through the checklist. We'll continue this next week because, yes, there's even more stupid email mistakes.